is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is...
You're listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network. News for your soul. Life-changing broadcasts to souls around the world since January 1997.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show. All right, we're back and we're live. I'm getting to do one of my favorite things, introduce you to two new members of the News for the Soul radio family. Actually, one of them met many years ago. Well, she's back, and the next level up of what's going on with her work and her partner, Beth Daniels and Gil, are here. We're going to introduce them momentarily. I'll just let you know, we start with our famous first question, no labels up front, soul-to-soul meeting, and we unpeel the onion from there, but if you want to read ahead, you can find their full bios and all the other information, links, etc., on newsforthesoul.com just by clicking their host through there. So let's welcome Beth and Gil on and start the fun. Welcome, guys. Welcome to News for the Soul.
Hi, Nicole.
Hey, Nicole.
Hey. We said that at the same time.
Yeah. Greetings.
Awesome.
It's great to be back here. I think it's like 11 years.
11 years. Wow. That's amazing. Well, you know, with the times that we're in now, and you're actually one of many who have returned after hiatuses because of the work that's needed right now on the planet. So not shocked, but very happy to reconnect and to meet you, Gil, and get to know both of you on the deeper levels this hour. So I like, this is always tricky when we have two people at once. So we will move forward with our famous question, because it's a place that connects us all as a community and a movement here on the Soul, the search for what's really real, what's really possible. And that is, we've all had experiences with something outside the 3D norm that's gotten our attention, woken us up, maybe even set us on our path. And I'm curious about your earliest recollection, each of you individually, of something like that, and also your most profound. So who'd like to start?
I think Gil does.
Oh, that's totally a setup. Okay.
Nicole, can you hear us okay?
Yep, perfectly.
Okay. There's a little bit of crackling. We just wanted to make sure. Okay. Go for it.
All right. Yeah, I'll go for it.
You're the newbie on the block.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, I come from an agnostic background, and, you know, God really wasn't a big part at all of my family's life, and so... talk about an early kind of wooing that God had on my heart. It was back when I was in, you know, middle school and early high school. And he just kept, you know, whispering his voice to me that he loved me and didn't hate me. And there was no guilt or shame associated with this. And over time, he just made himself really, really clear to me. So in college, I had done everything under the sun. I'd worked for three Fortune 500 companies. I had done things like, you know, played tennis to the highest levels in Arizona in high school. I was the number one jazz saxophone player there in Arizona as well. And then I took that to college with me. So there was just like things I was doing, you know, dating and drinking and just doing all kinds of things to kind of, you know, fill up my heart. And I realized that none of those were going to do that. You know, that there was definitely an empty space there. And that space for me, and I don't know if it's like this for your listeners, but that space for me was every night when I went to bed and laid my head on a pillow, you know, I got to play the tape back of that day and all the things I had done and all the accomplishments and all the kind of the report cards that had come in and everything I had done to fill my heart up. And that time with my head on the pillow before I drifted off was always thinking, there's got to be more.
Mm.
You know, there just does. If I'm going to, you know, walk on this planet for 80 years and I'm going to go to bed every night, no matter what I've done, no matter much how much money I've made, no matter how many accolades I have, whatever those successes are, and I was working, like, you know, to the bone, there's just, this just doesn't sound like a planet I want to be on for 80
right.
years. And, you know, God in his goodness just kept whispering to me, you know, I fill that empty space. You know, I'm the one who does that. You know, you're these other things aren't bad things. They're not things that are anything to be, you know, mad about or guilty about or feel shame about. It was just that those things were never meant to be number one.
Right.
And so when I really got that and that hit me in college, that was at the time when I just kind of said back to God, like, I'm in. You know, I'm in. This isn't doing it over here, so I'm in with you. And it wasn't a trial basis. It wasn't like I said to God, like, yeah, you better, you know, show up and here's the three things I need you to do. He's not a genie in a bottle. But there was definitely that piece where he came in like a flood. And
like flood. Tell us about
like
that.
Yeah, he just came in like a flood for me. And I think in those ways, my mom and dad were going through a nasty divorce. My mom had kicked my brother out of the home because he invited my dad to graduation. I mean, it was a really volatile home. I grew up in an abusive home. And so, you know, there was like, how do I traverse this? You know, how do I live in wisdom? How do I clock in and check into my higher self? And those things were all God-led, down to the smallest things, you know, like when I was sick and I was just feeling absolutely horrible and I thought I was going to die, and I'd say, okay, God, I need you to heal me. Like, is there a way you can do that? And that healing piece then began to happen. Sometimes it was in the moment, and sometimes it took many, many years. But those healings were always there when I called for them. You know, and God would always say to me, do you want to get well? Are you sure? Because my answer was yes. It'd be, are you sure? Because if you're in, I'm in. But if you need to go do whatever else, then go ahead and try to find that healing somewhere else. But when you come back, I'll still be here, you know? And so I always found myself dropping breadcrumbs away from God and following them back. And when I followed them back, you know, he was there. And I have a million stories I can tell about how that's happened. And that's gone over and over. I've not been perfect in any way, shape, or form. And in my imperfections, he has always been there with his perfections. So, I've just seen, you know, from here all around the world, Afghanistan, you know, building cities there, building new towns all over the world, Poland and other places. There's not a place on this planet that he hasn't met me.
Wow.
And so my 80 years, man, I want to rock them. And, you know, that's
where I sit with my 80.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want them to be the best. Then, of course, you brought Beth along, so that's a whole other miracle story.
All right, well, let's
this
see
is
Beth.
How you plucked me out of the mountains and Beth out of the ocean and put us in Prescott, Arizona, in a little dive hick
bar?
Cowboy bar called the Jersey Lily in downtown Prescott, and how, you know, just that perfect timing where we intersected together. I mean, that's just a whole nother miracle story.
All right. Well, where are we going to go next? Let's get your first initial earliest memory of your most profound experience with something outside the 3D norm.
Yeah. And I've talked about this before, you know, when I sent you the information recently, Nicole, and it's probably not the earliest, but I'd say the most profound because this has happened over and over since. And I had recently lost my grandfather, and he was 89, and he had recently died. He was really probably the most important person in my life, and he was just the most incredible spiritual man I've ever known and have ever met since. And so he had passed away. And it was interesting because I had joy because I knew he was amazingly good, and he was good. He was doing great. So everyone's like, man, you're really not crying about losing your grandpa. He's so important to you. Like, yeah, I don't have grief about it. I just know how he lived his life, and I know he's continuing that on the other side, and everything is great. So I had, you know, he had crossed over probably, I'm not sure, a year or two before, but one of his good friends, my step-grandma, I guess, his wife, was still here, and she still hung around with their great friends, David and Karen, and they were unfortunate. There was an unfortunate accident where David fell and hit his head, and my dad called me and told me what happened, and I could see in the moment my grandfather stretched out his arms to welcome David, you know, across the bridge, so to speak, so helped him to the other side. He held out his arms, and I saw it the minute my dad told me what happened to David, and I saw my grandfather reaching out for him, and I knew he was going to be the first person that he saw, and that he wasn't coming back, you know, into this body and into this life. He was moving on, and I felt so much peace because I knew, you know, it's like, yeah, David is there. He's with his old friend. It's all going to be good. And, you know, they're, oh, he's going to rally and he's coming back. And, you know, I'm not saying anything. It was all really sacred, you know. So I just knew. And then, yeah, a couple of days later, you know, the call came that, you know, he had transitioned. So that was the beginning for me of seeing, and not just seeing like diagnoses or physical problems for my clients, which I see every day with chronic conditions, but seeing beyond that and just being able to see what was true and what was beautiful and how spirit moves and what is really there for us. There's so much that we don't really know, or, you know, as humans, I think we don't really even know how to process sometimes. So that was the first time where I had a picture like that, and then that just happened continually after that. Almost every time I'm working with someone over the phone and I get pictures about things, and they're beautiful and they're deep, and I try to explain them, you know, as we go. But yeah, that was a really profound moment for me.
Yes, well, being able to see and get insight and have direct experience with anything about, you know, death and beyond death is probably the most important things we can tap into.
And you know, I think what happens, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think what happens is we spend so much time in our heads, you know, and we spend so much time, and for the people I work with who typically have chronic health conditions and they really need help, and for them as well, we spend so much time thinking about it and problems and focusing on them and maybe some on solutions, but we just spend our time with our nose to the grindstone or like on this treadmill of life. And this was like this moment of, no, that is not where the truth is. That is not where the truth is. Look up. Look up. Get your nose out of that treadmill, you know.
Yeah.
Look up and see what's really there and what is this experience really about and what is your divine path really about. What are you here for? What are you doing? You're not here to be sick. So I think that whole scenario just really helped me understand that better, and I try to work really hard to help people see that, and it just changes everything for them.
Beautiful. I'm curious about the synchronistic story of how you two kids met.
Well, I think we should let the storyteller tell the story.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
I'm in. I'll chime in.
Yeah, chime in.
Yeah, go ahead.
If I'm missing anything.
Yeah, I'd like to hear your perspective,
yeah.
Gil.
Yeah. Well, I had come to a place in my life, 3 or 4 years ago, where I was in a place where, you know, I was divorced and a single dad, 4 kids in high school. They're all teenagers. So it was really, really challenging. And, you know, I just hit a wall with that. You know, I've been super, super successful in raising up, you know, large, large churches and seeing really some really great things happen out of Colorado to change towns and cities. I mean, it was really awesome. And yet I was hitting a wall. You know, I had a lot of guilt and shame around that divorce piece. And, you know, I kind of had a movie in mind for me, right? Like, I knew what I wanted the movie to look like, and it was actually turning out to be a horror story. So I was like, okay. I wanted it to be Disney, you know, like, let's roll with that. And but that wasn't what was happening. And, you know, I kind of did. I had a really, really tough time where I ended up with the bottle as my best friend. And I grew up with a bunch of alcoholics. Matter of fact, generational alcoholism. And I was able to keep that at bay for quite a while, but I was not able to keep it at bay in my mid-40s. And so it just became something to soothe the pain of my life. You know, the movie was not turning out the way I really saw it fit to do. And so, I kind of wanted off the planet again. You know, at that point, I was like, you know, how do I do that? And kind of a Robin Williams kind of story, you know, in that way of being in front of crowds and being able to move people, having God really use me in that, and, you know, thousands and thousands of people. And still, I was just really frustrated with how things were going with that. I had gotten in a car accident a few years before that where my back was a drunk driver and my back was trashed. And so drinking alcohol was a way to calm that pain down. So there's a lot of things around that had me end up in rehab. So I ended up there back in, 2018 in Prescott, Arizona, and was just finishing up inpatient and doing really well. And when I bumped into Beth, my dad and her mom are friends, and they had never introduced us. So there was Beth was married. I was single for 14 years. But, you know, Beth was married, but here she wasn't. She was, you know, finally moving into singlehood, and so our folks decided to have us connect. And Beth was only in town for a little bit. I mean, she lives in Hawaii, and is doing her thing with that. And so it was really providential that night to bump into her. I was actually with someone else that night, was just a friend. But she was really struggling with a lot of things. And so Beth, I was like, oh, shit, I got to really listen to that. But I really want to, you know, connect with this woman who is so fascinating, you know, especially around what she did. So what she did and kind of what my heart was were very, very similar. We complemented each other well. And that night, I mean, the whole place could have just gone away. And we would have had just a great time connecting over a lot of subjects. So at the end of that night, I got Beth's card, which got stolen from me. Somebody took it. And I was like, shoot. So I had to do some work in Prescott to find her number, and I did, because that's what tenacious people do when they run into someone that they fall in love with. So I got her number, and I called her, and I said, let's set up a little time. And we set up a time to talk on the phone, and Beth was headed up to Seattle, and she forgot. So I called and no one was there. And being the tenacious guy that I am, I'm like, well, that had to be an honest mistake.
It was.
And, you know, there had to be an honest mistake. There's no way. No way she wouldn't want to talk to me. I'm just kidding. But I did. I was like, okay, maybe that. But I'm going to keep going. So I called her again. And you answered that time. And I go, so did what happened with our little phone date? And she was, I don't know what you said, but you got out of it.
I was with my daughter.
Yeah.
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 No, I had forgotten. But truth be told, Nicole, I mean, I was going through a divorce, and I thought that he had a girlfriend. So, you know, I thought he had a girlfriend. He showed up at this event, you know, with this girl. So I was happy to find out he didn't, but the truth of the matter is, the part that Gil did not say, which is, I think, awesome, is, well, first of all, the second we met each other, it's like we started talking about spiritual things.
Yeah.
I mean, who does that? So we connected immediately about really deep things and about healing others and how do you help other people heal yet still set good boundaries, you know, for your own life. And we got into all of this right away and how, you know, sensitive people...
Burnout,
how sensitive healers really are and how you need to protect that. And, I mean, we were just getting into all these amazing topics, and then my mom's like, well, we got to go. I'm like, oh, shoot, the dog needs to eat. But so we left, but it was really awesome. But the second, one thing I have to share, and I shared at our wedding, is when Gil walked in, I was sitting at a table with my mom. It was kind of a pre-Christmas party at this, you know, cowboy saloon, literally. And I saw Gil from the back. And I knew that my mom's
great
friend Jerry's son was going to be there. And I didn't know who he was or what he looked like or anything. So I saw him from the back first. I was just sitting at a table, and I saw how huge his heart was from the back.
Ooh.
It was just, again, it was like one of those visions, right? I just saw it, and I'm like, wow, I wonder who that is. I don't typically go around seeing the size of people's hearts, just so you know. So it was just right there. And I was like, I wonder who that is. And then he turned around and came over to the table, and I was like, whoa, that must be Jerry's son. So that was really the entry into our connection.
Yeah, and I saw Beth, and I thought, and God really reminded me, she's hot. That's what happens for me. So that's really deep. I just wanted to share that. It was a lightning bolt from heaven because she's blonde. So somehow, anyway, there's a lot there, but I won't unpack it. But all I have to say is that, yeah, so we connected there, and then we probably talked on the phone for 3 or 4 hours a night for a couple of months, and then Beth came back out to Prescott, and then we started to kind of plan what we could do. So I really like what Beth said, right? It's like, and if there, anybody of your listeners is a healer, they will get this, right? It's like we pour ourselves out continually, and then rarely is there a sponge. We're like a sponge, right? And we're looking for water somewhere to fill back up, because we're going to squeeze that sponge out on others that are hurting. And so we really connected over, you know, what's your water source? You know, what are you doing to fill back up the sponge of your heart? Because lots of healers get taken out. You know, I think there's a lot of spiritual battle that occurs with people who step out there to say, I really want to help. I want to help others find their purpose in life. I want them to find, you know, themselves. I want to really help them take next steps. And so, you know, we were able to come really quick to how burned out are you, you know, and how burned out are you? And, you know, what are you doing with that? Because, you know, I didn't need to ask Beth about her prolific healing life, because all you have to do is sit down with Beth for about 5 minutes and you'll understand just how, I mean, she's the most powerful and gentle healer I've ever met. That's why she has a global reach. You know, she has people all over the world that call in to talk to her because her heartbeat is so locked in. And so even today, we talked about it last night. You know, we look at each other and go, how are you doing with all that? You know, how's it going when you just got done with these five people today that were really, 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 really tough? I mean, only those who have basically been told they have no hope call Beth. And a lot of times, and Beth does, man. She is like the last house on the block for these people. And she's like this big spiritual triage at the end of the block that people bump into on their way to really complete helplessness and I would say even depression, like that goes deep. And so Beth gets that group of people, and Beth leans into that amazingly.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I mean, that's what I'm here to do. And it's really wild because most days at the end of the day, I have a lot more energy and I'm more invigorated than I was in the morning by far, because it invigorates me and excites me to help people change their life. You know, when I met you, I was going through a lot of personal hardship, and that really takes me down. The work that I do does the opposite. It's just invigorating to watch people's lives change, like over a day or longer, depending. But yeah, it's. Thank you, Gil, for saying that.
Well, yes, when you're on purpose, it's not work. It's you know, when you're serving, it's very
exactly
wonderful, energizing. It feeds you. I'm curious, Gil. You know, I want to ask you this question because since all this COVID crap, a lot of people have been dealing with a lot of stuff, including alcohol addiction has been widely prevalent globally since all the lockdowns and shutting down of, you know, spiritual centers and all entertainment industry and travel and, you know. So I'm wondering what you did. How did you overcome it?
As far as getting through COVID?
No, the alcohol addiction.
I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah, that's his. Now I get to brag on him for a second before he talks. Seriously, the failure rate of people that go through rehab is 99%, literally. 1% make it and hold it. So people that work with him get to hold that healing and not go back. So he is amazing in this. He will not say that, so I'm going to say that before I let him talk about it, because I've never seen such a thing. I've never seen such beauty come from just these ashes of dark addiction and what he does to help people through that. So I have to say that first. Now you can talk.
Well, I think the number one thing, and I ask every guy this, you know, do you have the gift of desperation? You know, if you don't have that gift, that desperate soul, that rebel soul, which is awesome. I have a rebel soul. And if I can set that into the right channel, right? Yeah. It's like if I can find the Gulf Stream, you know, and if I get aligned with the Gulf Stream, I'm going to be in great shape, right? So, I mean, a straw can actually let the Gulf Stream go through it as long as that straw is in alignment with the Gulf Stream. So most people are not in alignment with that. And so, and by the way, that's a gift too, because it'll get them to the gift of desperation. I mean, I like what C.S. Lewis said, right? Like, pain is God's megaphone to rouse a hurting world. And I think it's a great thing when someone says, you know, man, I'm struggling. And so for me, it was all or nothing. And I mean that. Like, I did not have a point percentage when I dealt with my alcoholism that was saying, I think I can do this. I've only been beat by two things in my life. I mean, I've been beat by, but I mean, I'm talking about incredible Hulk slammed in my life. And that was a marriage that I had that out of everything I could do, it was not going to make it. And then, and then alcohol. So I just tell people that, right? I mean, I got incredible Hulk slammed by those two things. And it's okay to say that, you know? And I think I had to become comfortable with that to say, you know what? This is my path, and I'm in with this, and I'm also going to go with this, like, gift of desperation piece. So when I was there every day, and I probably did, I don't know, upwards of 700-plus meetings with groups, and sitting down with some of the best spiritual directors in the world, and sitting down and really picking up the Buddhist practice of meditation. I mean, really learning what that means and how to do it. It's kind of like mental and spiritual yoga. And being able to hold those kind of spaces, both in groups and my own self, where my inner voice became very, very clear, where I realized I had bulldozed some values that I held near and dear. You know, I had this vision for my life and all this thing I wanted to be, and I bulldozed some things that I really counted as sacred, and I was really, I really wanted to see that healed, and I wanted to see that dealt with, because I was willing to go back and, it was really hard, but I was really able to go back and walk through my childhood, and, I have a boy, his name is Cade, and Cade is so tender-hearted. He's like me, like we're really highly sensitive people. And what helped me so much was thinking, if I were to treat Cade the way I was treated, I mean, I just started weeping. Like, you know, just to be able to go back and hold that kid that I was, rather than look at it like, well, I couldn't overcome it, I must suck, you know, this is really bad, yeah, whatever, you know, it's like, no. that little boy back there needs held. And that, and I mean, I know that sounds corny, and maybe it sounds corny to some of your listeners, but I'm telling you, it's true. When that boy can be held by you, your own, you can go back and walk through that childhood trauma in a really, really healthy way. It's hard, and there's a lot of tears, and there's a lot of fighting with that, and there's a lot of, you know, even some anger and some bitterness and some resentment. And to be honest, I hated, as much as I hated my dad, as much as I hated whatever, you know, my ex, whatever it would be that I've ever said, oh, that was whatever, I hated myself even more. And that's where the real devastation and tragicness happens, is when other people's voices then become yours, and they're not healthy. So I got to go back and unwrap all that. And, I mean, I'm talking, like, with everything I had. I had a guy that sat next to me during a meeting. He was 72 years old, and he was with the Washington Post. He was a journalist. And during one meeting, and I'm like, I'm writing books. My journal is being packed out. I think I was, you would think I was writing a Tom Clancy novel. And this guy, this Washington Post guy next to me goes, you know, Gil, I'd give anything to be able to read what you're writing. And I said, really, anything? So, but, you know, I think that, that was my posture, was really, really, I needed mercy, and I needed help. And I ended up coming to a place that I was able to ask for it, which most people don't. So, and now I help people through it. And, you know, anger, anxiety, and addiction, those three. Most guys I know, those three are tied together. And when I say addiction, I don't mean just alcoholism. I'm talking about isms. Workaholism, busyism, you name it. I mean, it's sportsism. Whatever it is that you're throwing your heart into to mute and numb all that pain, that's an ism. And so I really help guys see it as okay. It's normal. We live in a broken world. That's okay. And that, you know, I'm in it with you, and you – you know, before long, they're telling me things that they've never told their wives, and I think that's really, really important, or just any friends they've ever had. And they're like, well, I'm gonna, because they're so waiting on the slap. They're waiting on the you suck. They're waiting on you get an F. They're waiting on the shame and guilt that goes with this stuff. And I'm like, nope. And when they can put down those really harsh weapons and just come, then God starts to do his work, and then I just walk them through all of that. And, you know, I have, like, you know, I don't know, eight modules that I just walk through. And but really, I do person by person. You know, everybody's got a distinct story. Not everybody's the same. And so it's like anything else. It's like, hey, I want to walk you through this, but I want to walk it through in a unique way that is really you, because we're gonna mold this, and we're gonna shape this. We're gonna, you know, you're going through an entire life remodeling right now. So we're gonna go through that, and it doesn't have to be very long, you know. I've had guys say to me, man, I used to, you know, every night coming home, I, you know, grab a whiskey and sit down, and before long I was yelling at my wife and telling my kids to get out of my face. And it's like, you know, we're a month into this thing, and they're like, it's weird. I go home now, and it's like I'm peaceful. You know, what happened? And I'm like, well, you're letting God remodel your soul, because that needs to happen. Your soul needs remodeled. And that, you know, that takes work. We're getting ready to sell our house right now out here in Hawaii, and we've got people working on the roof, and they're working all over, and it's loud, and it's noisy, and it's, and sometimes you hear a guy that, you know, lets out a shriek. I mean, this is like, come on, you know, everybody's trying to get this house up to speed. Me too. And it's the same kind of intensity, but it's also, man, it's so great at the end of the day to be able to walk outside and look at what happened and the newness of it. Mm-hmm. And every day these guys get to turn around, and I help them turn around and look at themselves. And every day, you know, it's like today we got the roof fixed, you know. Next week it's the plumbing. You know, the week after that we're going to be building a new wing onto your soul. You know, all these things. And it's like, and guys grasp that, and they see hope in that, and they get over that. And then, man, they shout it from the rooftops because, you know, they did it. And I'm so proud of them when they do. And these are high-flying leaders. You know, these are people that are highly successful. And what happened is they just hit a bump in the road, and it became more than a bump. It became a wall, and they can't get over it, and they can't tell anybody because everybody sees them as just a stud.
Yep.
Everybody goes, that person, man, is anybody, you know? It's like when I got a divorce, I can't tell you how many people came up to me and went, well, what are we going to do now? You were our hope.
Yeah.
You know, you were our hope. And I'm like, wow, okay. So these guys are walking through that. They're like, Gil, if I ever admitted this, I don't know what would happen. And I'm like, well, let's start here. Let's start here. And how bad do you want it? And, man, it is, it's, I don't know, it's just, it's actually fun. And it's fun for them because they get to see all the great things that God will do. And I get to be the one who's their tour guide. And that's what I do. I'm just a tour guide. And I walk them through and they go, oh, look at that over there. I go, yeah, what do you want to do with that? What do you want to do with that? Do something with that? You know, I think we can make that into a an incredible rec center. You want to do that? You know what I mean? So, like, we just kind of walk these things through, and it's just so great. You know, I don't know what – I mean, it's just really – I don't know. Do you have anything else you wanted to add to that? Or?
Well, I mean, it's the path to success for people that are struggling with those things.
Yeah, because they want to go home and have success there, too, and they're not.
Right.
You know, and then they're embarrassed because they're numbing it out, and they don't want anybody to know. It might be pornography. It might be whatever it would be, right? But they're numbing it out. They're muting the world, and they're like, I'm not like this. I'm supposedly, you know, I'm supposed to be, you know, Braveheart. I'm William Wallace. What are you talking about? And it's like, well, how about we all just be human and walk this through? Mm-hmm. So it's really, and to get those people, those highly successful people that come to the place where they're willing to see their whole lives be successful and they're willing to do whatever it takes to do that, man, that's the lottery, baby.
That's beautiful. I'm so glad you're bringing that forward and from your own challenge, turning it into an important service in the world. That's huge. Beth, we'll get to the healing in a minute, but I want to know more about the relationship work you're doing together.
Yeah. It's amazing. Well, you know, before, in your words, which I totally agree with, before the COVID crap, before the COVID crap, we were starting to do in-person retreats on relationships, and the first one we did was called hashtag Why Is Love So Hard? You know, we've both gone through divorce. We both have learned a lot. We've worked together really hard on bringing what we each have brought, you know, garbage to the table, and working things through and learning how to do that. The way that we communicate with each other through conflict, I didn't know was even possible. So when we got together, we felt like, you know, there are so many people, again, that feel, like Gil's talking about, you know, shame or guilt of, you know, well, if I go to a relationship retreat, you know, I don't want anybody to know I'm here, or, you know, or to look like I have a problem or admit that I'm divorced. Well, everybody at our last retreat, I think, was divorced or heading in that direction anyway. So, you know, I think we're taking a different position other than, you know, you hear about relationship retreats. Ours is not the norm. It's why is love so hard, and come and bring all of your pain and nasty stories and everything you've gone through, and we're going to help you walk through that. Not, oh, just, you know, read together as a family and everything's fine. And I'm not bashing that, but we come at things a little more edgy than is, I think, mainstream, because we know that that's really where people are. They just put a smooth veneer over it in public or, you know, when they're talking with others or whatever. So we started to do that, you know, before the COVID crap hit. And then, you know, we've tried to do some of that online yet, and we're putting an item in our shopping cart here soon as well at besthealingsolutions.com and at gillandbest.com. That is one of our retreats that we filmed so that people can still access that. But I'm really excited about the relationship work, and we do that over the phone with people as well. Through, you know, over Zoom or something similar. So, you know, that's another option that we have. But, yeah, I think, you know, and I was a psychologist for years as well, and I think our approach to helping people with relationships is really fresh and, like I said, more edgy and real, that it really does help people. And the testimonials we had from our retreat would speak to that. People just felt really profound changes in their relationships, and a lot of times also with their relationship with themselves, of course, which then is helpful in the big picture too. So, yeah, that's a little bit on that.
Beth, can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Can you describe the premise? You mentioned the unique communication and conflict solving. What kind of unique communication are we talking about?
Oh, with Gil and I? Yeah, really. Well, and we walk people through this as well that we work with. It's how to fight fair and forgive fast. And you can jump in here, too, if I forget. Gil has a much better memory than I. but it's really walking people through that and what that means and then looking at, okay, what are your conflict styles? There are different conflict styles. Are you a turtle that goes into your shell? Are you a skunk that sprays people? Looking at, okay, we go through what are conflict styles, and then, or what's your major one? You can have several. So that's one of the things we do. And then we talk about, what are within that then, how do you find a solution out of your type of conflict style? And then we also talk about if you have a certain conflict style, what does that really mean about you? In other words, how did you get to that place? Like, what were the painful moments in your life? What led you to be this way in arguments? This doesn't happen by osmosis. It's automatic programming, from your childhood and family issues and things like that and what you've seen and taken in. So we go through that, and then how, based on that, do you learn to resolve? How do you learn to resolve? And walking through those steps with people. Do you want to jump in there?
I think, Nicole, the big shift is this. In our culture, we see the wedding day as the finish line, when actually the wedding day is the starting line. And so even though we have singles come to our retreats and they come and they have a blast and we, help them be able to navigate their next steps, for married people, it's, the culture said when we got married, like we all, I threw my garter and he, we smashed a glass and it was like everybody clapped for us. And then it's like, all right, good luck.
Bye.
We do all this premarital counseling. And then when the marriage hits, we're like, okay, you're good. Bye. And they're going, I need some post-marital. And matter of fact, with the COVID thing, divorce rates are skyrocketing, not just, your addictive issues. I mean, you're talking about people that had to live together that had found other ways to avoid. Most of us in our culture are very much avoiders. And so they found ways to avoid. Well, when you're under the COVID deal, right, it's like now you're in lockdown with these people. It's like The Purge, the movie, right? It's like, man, we got to lock down here for a night. And for these guys, it was locking down for, 6, 8, 12-plus months. And then they're like, okay, Beth, Gil, everything I was hiding from has now come out. It's like one thing I liked about COVID is that we're all like a tube of toothpaste, and COVID squeezed us, and we got to see what came out. That's the only way you can tell what's in a tube of toothpaste is getting squeezed. And this last year, all of us got squeezed. And we got to see what came out of our hearts. We got to see it. And then it's like, okay, what do you want to do about that? I mean, what a gift, right? Like, what a gift. Thank you, COVID, and all the BS behind it. Thank you, though, for the gift of squeezing me so I could see what's really inside me. Because, man, most of us are image managers, and we're really good at it.
Yes. Yes, yes.
And our culture has allowed that. Our culture actually speaks into, okay, guys, here's how you can keep doing things, still buying our products without getting caught with this, So it's like, when people finally go, okay, there I am, and sometimes they get caught, and then they go, well, my wife told me to give you a call, Gil, because if I didn't, she's out of here. But I really liked what COVID did, because the starting point now is the wedding. And people, the wedding day, and people are realizing that, man, if I want this to last, I'm going to have to develop not just skills. And Beth and I will give you tools for your toolkit. But really, I want a new heart. That's what I really want. Skills are one thing. And again, we can even hide behind those. How many people do you know that are super knowledgeable? They have master's and doctorate degrees, and they're idiots. A lot. Because they never learned how to develop their heart. They knew how to get through classes and get good grades, but really on the other side of that, they're just like major a-holes. And so what we want to do there is say, okay, there you are. That's good. Good. You got squeezed. That came out. Now let's go. And so Beth and I have actually found it really, really refreshing because we don't have to sit there and have them say, you know, and hide from us too. They don't get to hide. You know, there it is. Let's deal with it. And then they do, and it's awesome.
Well, and one of the things, I think, a different way that we've looked at relationships than other traditional relationship retreats is, and Gil, you just triggered this when you were talking, is one of the main focus, major focus that we have is doing your inner work. It's not just, okay, do this as a couple, do this as a couple. It's doing your inner work and cultivating that and doing your inner, like, childhood trauma work, looking at yourself and like as an objective observer, you know, learning to do that and watching yourself in relationship and what your patterns are. So really a lot of it is looking inside and working through things rather than just, well, this is what they do. So, you know, this is what my partner does. So now, you know, that's what the focus is. So now we have to do this more as a couple. It's not like that. It's really going in and doing inner work. And that's the answer. And then if both people are doing that, that's even more of a beautiful answer.
Yes, indeed. Well, here's where we're at. We're about, oh, my gosh, it's just flying by. We're 13 minutes to the top. We want to ask, talk about the approach to healing and how it may have changed in the last 11 years and then how that all ties together and what you're going to do on future shows. So, Beth, if you want to start us off about healing.
Sure. Yeah, I've been a healer now for 20 years. I was a psychologist before that. But yeah, in terms of how things have evolved, well, I'm sure from being on your website and people seeing our bios there, if they aren't familiar with the work that I do, my specialty is helping people with chronic conditions that have no answers. And I have a team that has evolved over time that is amazing, and team of people, practitioners from different walks of life, different backgrounds and specialties that I've trained. And I also started a mastery program for students, and Healing Solutions started a year and a half ago, and we've had over 100 students come in to our mastery program so far. So people want to learn how to do this, and it's teachable. So I've put a lot more focus on that over the past year as well, to teach people these skills, because it seems so, oh, you know, you just either have